Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, Nancy and I were walking in downtown Boulder along Pearl Street and were intrigued by some interesting marimba music. And that's what led to today's show about teaching blind children around the world.
Playing in a marimba band is one of Carol Puchalski's hobbies, but we'll be talking with her today about her 30 years working with blind children at the Anchor Center in Denver, Colorado, and more recently about some work she's been doing with the Chain Foundation School for the Blind in Uganda. And we'll be talking with her about her experiences working with blind children, both in the U.S. and in Uganda. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Carol Puchalski.
I think that anytime you travel to a new country, particularly one that you consider to be more of a third world country than a first world country, you go with a certain amount of assumptions about what it's going to be like. And if there's any way that you can just put those on hold until you've been there a while, I would say do that, because it's not going to be what you think it is. And it is, at least in Uganda, as I mentioned before, the country itself is absolutely beautiful, but even more important than that, so are the people. And they might not do the things that we do, and they might not do work exactly how we would do it, but they do a wonderful job with what they have.
And as Carol said, sometimes when we run into new places or new situations, our assumptions can be very misleading. But if we approach these situations with an open mind and willing to learn new ways of doing things, it can often be a very enjoyable experience.
And to reinforce Carol's comment, over 100 years ago, Mark Twain said, and I quote, "Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness." And that thought still remains true today.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible by
Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2017 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC. That was not our usual breaker tune. That was Carol's marimba band called Low Flying Knobs playing a tune called Zinanga. And now you can see why we were so intrigued when we came upon this band playing music in the middle of Colorado. Let's start by meeting Carol.
My name is Carol Puchalski. I live in Colorado, and I have worked my entire career with young visually impaired children. I worked for over 30 years at a place in Denver called Anchor Center for Blind Children as a developmental psychology consultant. So some of my top interests are, of course, social emotional development and cognitive development of those children.
And we know you have at least one other interest, because we ran into you in a rather unexpected circumstance in Boulder, Colorado. Tell our listeners what you were doing at the time.
Okay. When I met you, I was playing on the Pearl Street Mall in a marimba band. And the marimba band, which is called the Low Flying Knobs, has been in Boulder County for over 20 years. And we play primarily Zimbabwean music.
And this was a fundraiser, right?
And it was a fundraiser. I was fortunate in 2011 to go to Uganda to visit a school there and was planning to go back. And so the fundraiser that we had this summer was to bring that school a donation. And then I just went this October.
And that's what we'll be talking about in just a bit.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is what kind of help blind children need and what kind of help they can get.
So tell us a little bit about how you got involved in these activities in Uganda to bring services to the visually impaired community there.
Sure. It is an interesting and kind of a sad story. The country of Uganda has both an Anglican archbishop and a Catholic archbishop, and of course, Muslims and people of other religious faiths as well. But the retired Anglican archbishop, whose name is Livingston Nikiyoyo, had five children, one of whom came to study at the University of Denver in Colorado many years ago. And while he was here, he ended up having leukemia and passed away. And so the retired archbishop and his wife have a very strong love of Colorado and connection to the state. And as a result, they started first an orphanage and then a school in his name in Uganda. And I ended up meeting him because he visited Anchor Center for Blind Children. So that's kind of how it all began.
Can you give us an overview of what the Anchor Center for Blind Children does?
The Anchor Center for Blind Children in Denver started in 1982. And it works with children from birth to age five, so all kids pre-kindergarten, in all areas of development to help the children as well as the families learn ways that will help their child be the best they possibly can be.
So I assume since these children are all preschool ages, you're not teaching them a lot of literacy skills yet, but this would include mobility and socialization and pre-literacy skills?
Yes. As a matter of fact, they really do get a lot of pre-literacy. The staff has, of course, several teachers of the visually impaired, speech pathologist, occupational therapist, physical therapist, music therapist, horticultural therapist, and I was their developmental psychologist, and they have a social worker. So they have quite the accomplished staff that specializes in a child with vision loss, and the kids get help in whatever they need.
So it sounds like this covers a range of disabilities and sometimes combined issues.
It does. So the way that the school in Denver works is that if a child is diagnosed with any sort of significant vision loss, and that usually happens by the pediatrician, not always, then they're referred to Anchor Center, and our infant program is totally free, and we see all of those kids if the parents are interested.
That's great that you start so early in the child's development, though, because if they go into school and have to start learning these skills when they're in kindergarten or first grade, they can start out behind the eight ball, and that can affect them the rest of their lives. You're giving them a real head start here. And I guess the goal is that eventually they can be mainstreamed once they have these skills.
Yes, and the majority of them are.
This sounds like a really fantastic program. Do you know if there are others in other places besides just Denver?
There are several. Unfortunately, there used to be more than there are now. The ones that have lasted and thrived tend to be the private nonprofits. The ones that were federally funded, we've seen some of those go away. Right now, I would say there are 10 to 12 states that have very similar programs.
So now that we understand a little bit about the Anchor School for the Blind, and you indicated earlier that you made a connection in Uganda in an unusual fashion, tell us a little bit about the program that you actually started there and what goes on in Uganda.
Well, the program in Uganda, and I didn't start it at all, it already existed. Livingston, the retired archbishop, wanted to be able to help less abled children in Uganda, basically what we would call children with special needs. What he was seeing was that those were the children that either didn't get an education at all, or depending on their special need, were very, very segregated. So the first thought was to build an orphanage for those children so they didn't end up on the street. And that started around 2001. The orphanage today has about 100 children, but they pretty quickly got to that number. And then in about 2008 or 9 is when the school itself opened. It's currently kindergarten through 7th, and after primary 7 there, the children go to high school.
Is this a regular school?
The unique thing about the school is that the retired archbishop's vision was to have the school integrate children with visual impairment with sighted children. So out of the 400-ish number that go to the school there, about 100 of them live there as orphans, and about 50 of them have significant visual impairment.
Now, when we met you, you were about to leave for a trip to Uganda, and you recently came back. Can you tell us a little bit about Uganda itself and how life there is a little bit different than in the United States?
Uganda is a beautiful country. I think the first thing that I have to say is I don't know that I've ever met a more welcoming people. The people at the school, as well as the people in the cities, are very, very welcoming to people from outside of Uganda. And there are very happy people. I think that there are very musical people, so of course I love that. And they all really work incredibly hard for those children.
Tell us a little bit about their services and how much governmental support people will get in Uganda if they have special problems, as opposed to what services might be available in the U.S.
Okay. The school fortunately has two people on its staff, teachers who also have visual impairments that are the teachers of the visually impaired for these children. The resources that they have and any help from the country is pretty much nothing. The school is not only supported by what's called the Chain Foundation in Denver, but the Chain Foundation has three other locations as well. So, you know, it's a nonprofit, and there's a location in Texas, there's a location somewhere on the East Coast of the United States, and also a foundation office in Germany. So all four of those offices really support the school.
And what's your relationship with the school in Uganda?
Well, when I first went in 2011, I went with three other young women that had been there once before, and they had a connection to the Chain Foundation itself in Denver. But one was a pediatric nurse, one was a social worker, and one worked with the African Community Center in Denver. So all of us kind of had, you know, something in there that brought us to want to help this population. They were very anxious to get somebody there that had worked for so long with children with visual impairment. And when I was there in 2011, I brought them canes, which they didn't have, and we worked on teaching the children cane use and just observing the classrooms and, of course, giving the teachers of the classroom some suggestions on things that they could be adding or possibly helping the children with in that capacity.
How would you compare your latest experience in Uganda with your previous trip there?
This time when I went back, I was very interested, having worked mostly in early childhood education, to see what they were doing with their kindergarten classrooms, because they didn't have kindergarten when I was there before, and now they have three kindergartens. So that was of interest to me, just as well as seeing how the children were doing emotionally, socially, and to spend a little more time with their social workers. they had grown from 3 social workers in 2011 to 8.
Wow.
Wow.
At your second visit, were you able to notice any growth among the students based on your first visit?
Absolutely. And that was one thing that was, of course, really fun and exciting for me, is that I got to see so many students that were now 5 years older. So some of the children that were in the early primary grades are now getting closer to high school, and you could see what sort of things they were doing that were a little bit more academic in the classrooms, how they were using the Braillers, what their Braille reading was like, and just, it was wonderful to see that.
That must have been really gratifying.
It was. We also visited a school that wasn't there before in a town about an hour and a half away that is a segregated school, but it's more of a vocational school for high school age visually impaired students. And about 10 of the students from the chain school had gone to this school. And it was a wonderful program because without it, they might not have been successful in a traditional high school. But this particular 2-year program was teaching them vocational skills to be able to go out and work doing things like knitting sweaters or weaving baskets or, you know, doing things with their hands that were making products that were known to be a need in the country. And one of the other big hopes of the chain school is to incorporate that as they grow into their own school, which they've already done some. They added a huge pottery lab and hired a wonderful young man who actually got a college degree in ceramics. And he teaches the primary 4 kids and up how to do pottery.
You know, we've done a number of episodes where we've talked with people who have worked with others in less developed countries. And, you know, we take a lot for granted in this country in terms of resources and availability of technology. It always amazes me in some of these other places how much they can do with so little. I mean, you bring over a cane and you've opened up new doors for these people. And now you're teaching them to actually, you know, produce products that they can sell and hopefully make a living.
Exactly. And the cane thing is an interesting story. The campus of the chain school and the town that it's in is called Mukono in Uganda, which is fairly rural. Much less rural this time, but still kind of rural. Is a big campus. They have people on staff that take care of cows and goats and pigs and that sort of thing. And then they also have a lot of crops that they grow because they are getting close to being self-sustaining. But even though it's a big campus, the kids that live on the campus know it so well that they really don't need canes for the campus. But as soon as they go off the campus, they really do need them. So that was a bit of an eye-opener to me that they do as well as they do in a large environment without necessarily needing them.
So I'm guessing if a simple cane is so hard to come by in terms of resources, you talked about Braillers, and I would guess that they're trying to teach these people to use computers so they can communicate with the sighted. That can't be very ubiquitous.
No, and certainly a couple of things that I'd say to that, one of them would be a plea to your audience. One thing that they could really use is a used embosser. They're incredibly expensive. If I were to find one, I'm sure that the Chain Foundation would pay to have it shipped to them. But currently, because they do not have an embosser, the 2 teachers of the visually impaired there, when they are preparing the 1st graders through the 7th graders for exams, and they not only have their own school exams, they have national exams, they braille every test, every subject by hand.
Oh my gosh.
Which to me, that like just makes my shoulders hurt.
So are they using Perkins Brailers or they're using slate and stylus?
For the most part, they're using the Brailers. Some of the children in the lower grades, they learn to use the slate and stylus. But by the time they're in, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, they're usually using the Brailers. And it's fun to see the classroom because they don't group the kids with the Brailers together. They spread them out through the classroom. Each of the kids with a vision problem for the day has a buddy that sits with them. Because as we know, some children, whether sighted or not, feel confident to stand up and ask a question, and others don't. So their buddy's there to help them. But we've got the clackety-clack on the old Perkins Brailers going the whole time during school, but all the kids are used to it. So, yeah, it works.
Wow.
That's got to make a racket.
Is there any use of computers and speech output?
No. The children don't have anything like that at all, and actually the staff have very, very little. When I came back this time, my request to the Local Chain Foundation was that they find some way, either through their office or in collaboration with all four offices, to get them Wi-Fi. Mainly because they have one computer in their office, does not have Wi-Fi. And like I said, they have eight social workers that write constant reports who take turns. And they just really need to be a little bit more up to date on their technology. A very heartwarming thing that happened before I went was that I requested on Facebook, have to love social media for this, made a request that if anybody had used digital cameras, laptops, iPads, that they let me know so I could take them. And I ended up taking four iPads, a digital camera, and a camcorder, and a laptop. And you would think that I had given them $1 million. They were so excited. It was like, made me cry.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So what happens to many of these students after they leave the school? What opportunities are available to them or not in their local communities?
Well, it depends on their level of academics. So I would guess that the majority of them do end up going to one of several high schools in the area. Some of the high schools are boarding schools, and some of the high schools are not. So there are some orphans at Chain that get up at the crack of dawn and get transportation to their school and then come back. And there are others that I met 5 years ago that I did not see because they were at boarding high schools. And then, like I mentioned, some of them have gone to this two-year vocational school. And really, the goal is to see that these children are productive, that they end up leading productive lives. And I know that they're going to continue to expand their vocational opportunities right there at the school to try and ensure that even more.
This type of volunteer work, I guess, can be very rewarding, but also very, you know, you're very emotionally invested. Have you made any special connections with people that you'd like to share some stories with our listeners about?
Well, probably my most special connection is that I sponsor a child. So it's a child that's not visually impaired, but we hadn't met each other. A young man whose name is Henry, who was 10 at the time and is now 15. So when I got back, I got to meet him, and early on in my sponsorship of him, communication between the two of us was quite slow. And once Henry got into high school, which he is now, he got access to a computer through school, and so now he can message me.
Oh, how exciting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is, of course, instant.
Yeah, that has to feel great.
It does. That was really fun. Just a delightful young man. And it was not only heartwarming, but just a tremendous learning experience to meet a 15-year-old young man that's been an orphan for a long time.
I should have thought to ask this before, but your story reminds me to ask this question now. What did you do about the language barriers there?
They all speak English.
Is that right?
Yeah. Their primary language is Luganda, like Uganda, but with an L.
So this is generally true across Uganda, that people learn English at a very early age?
Yes.
That was Carol's marimba band, Low Flying Knobs, playing the tune Sikuru Joe. And now for this week's final item, how to get more information about the Chain School for the Blind in Uganda, about the Anchor Center for Blind Children in Denver, Colorado, and about Carol's marimba band, including how to get more of their music.
So if people would like to find out more about the Anchor Center for Blind Children, where would you send them?
I would send them to their website, and it is anchorcenter.org.
And if people had questions for you, is there a way they can contact you and find out more about the program in Uganda?
I would be happy to answer those questions. And of course, again, particularly if it includes a used embosser, they could contact me at my email, which is poochfam, P as in Paul, O-O-C-H, F like Frank, A, M as in Mary, @comcast.net.
And if people wanted more information about the Chain Foundation and the school in Uganda, where would they go?
I would send them to their website, and it is Chain Foundation Uganda, all one word, .org.
So we've been talking about your marimba band. Can you remind people what its name is?
It's the Low Flying Knobs.
And if people wanted to learn more about it or hear some of your music, where would they go?
The easiest thing for you to do is to go to our website, which is lowflyingknobs.com.
And for any of the contact information you heard, you can always go to our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1711. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about updates to data visualization from SAS. We'll be speaking with Ed Summers, a blind engineer and head of the accessibility team at SAS, about some new capabilities that they have just announced that enable blind people to better analyze data. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes. Follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.